The tradition of Festivus begins with the airing of grievances. I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of The Airing of Grievances. I'm your host, Jay. I'm here with my co-host, Micah.
Hey.
All right, guys, we're back. This episode is entitled The Understudy. This episode is all about Jerry dating this woman, Janice, who is the understudy for Bette Midler, who is starring in a stage musical adaptation of Rochelle, Rochelle, The Erotic Adventures of a Woman Going from Milan to Minsk, which was actually the subject of the episode called The Movie that we did previously. Meanwhile, George is part of the A story with what happens with Bette Midler alongside Jerry and Jerry's girlfriend. And Kramer is also there, and we'll get to that, obviously. And then Elaine is dealing with going to a Korean nail shop and wondering if the people are talking about her negatively in Korean. And then comedy ensues. What did you think of this episode?
This episode is, it's not one that people talk about, but it's incredibly underrated to me.
Okay.
I love Jerry Stiller in this series.
Yeah.
Whenever Frank Costanza is in an episode, it's going to be good.
That is absolutely true. Yeah.
And when he's paired with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I mean, that's comedy gold.
Yeah, when he's with Jason Alexander, obviously, like as his father and like with his both of his parents there, that's always good. But that weird adversarial team of like rivals sort of thing he has with Elaine is super good.
It's really good, man. I absolutely love, he steals the show from me.
This episode? Yeah.
Yeah, he absolutely steals this episode from me. I love it. With regard to the A story, you know what? It's pretty decent.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's not bad. I mean, is it something to end a season on? I mean, you know, sitcoms don't usually crescendo into something like...
The only thing you could say is that they got a big guest star.
Yeah, yeah. There were other people who were possible celebrities for this episode besides Bette Midler. Julie Andrews, Cher, Mary Tyler Moore, and Carol Burnett were all possible celebrities. I would have loved to have seen Carol Burnett.
Yeah, Carol Burnett would have been really good for obvious reasons. I mean, just for comedy reasons.
Yeah.
I could see Cher being also very good. Like just being because she's kind of a weirdo, aloof kind of person.
Yeah,
I could see Kramer interacting with her very well. Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah,
but I thought Bette Midler actually did a pretty good job.
She did way better than I thought she would.
Yeah, no, I thought she was good. Considering the other down the road celebrities that show up, this is pretty good. I mean, we've had fucking Giuliani at one point. It's not bad. It's not a best guest spot. So the episode opens with Jerry and Janice, his new girlfriend, watching Beaches, which I've never seen.
No.
But I know it's sad because my mom watched it when I was a kid and was crying. So I was like, yeah, it's like a pretty emotional movie. I think it's about like two women who are friends.
Does one die? Because that's so the only reason.
Yeah, it's something like of cancer.
Yeah.
Like it's probably like of cancer and AIDS and is a war vet like and lost a dog. Like it's like all of these things. But... So they're watching Beaches, and Jerry is sitting on his chair, and this woman, Janice, is on the couch, on the opposite end of the couch. And so we hear Jerry's internal monologue as she's crying at the end of Beaches, and he's like, what am I supposed to do with this? It's Beaches, for God's sake. Like, should I go over there and console her? And he's like, should I go over? He's like, yeah, it's not like somebody died, so I guess nobody died. Or in reality.
Yeah, in reality. Yeah.
Because he's a fucking cold-hearted bastard.
Yeah, somebody, yeah. Bette Midler's friend dies in beaches.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't need to see beaches.
I mean, who cares?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure it's a great movie. I've heard it's good. I'm not watching beaches. It's fine. But so he's having this internal monologue, and then he's like, "Should I go over there? Should I go over there?" And he's like, "You know what? I refuse to go over there." And he like crosses his arms as he says it. I am very okay. So when it comes to consoling people about things that are not real, I'm Jerry, right?
Okay, all
right. Like I'm not consoling my wife crying at a movie. Like that doesn't feel like. Nah, yo.
Like, it doesn't feel right, right? It doesn't feel right.
It feels disingenuous because you're crying about nothing.
Right. But at the same token of, you know, you speaking about it being disingenuous, I am 100% going to be disingenuous if it will get me closer to where I want to go.
Okay, that is fair.
Yeah.
Like if I was dating.
Yeah.
Like it was like, oh, we're watching beaches. Oh, are you okay?
Oh, you put your head down here.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I mean, look, you know, scumbag rules apply.
It is what it is, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, look. There is a definitive, very thin line between, tragedy and, you know, like...
Like emotions get all stirred up,
yeah,
man.
That's why people just go and, like, bang after a funeral. Like, you're all sad.
Yeah.
And you're like,
make me feel good. You know what I mean?
Like, Halle Berry was right, guys.
Right.
She was right. It's disturbing.
She won an Oscar for that.
For that movie. Yeah, America just wanted to see Halle Berry get fucked by a white man. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah, that's exactly what that was.
It's ridiculous. That's reverse racism. So we cut to the next day where George and Jerry, they're talking in his apartment, and Jerry's explaining the situation about how, like, basically having a conversation we just had, which is like, should I have gone over there? And George is like, where were you sitting? Where was she sitting? He's like, that's a long way to travel, man. Like, for a movie cry? Like, yeah, I don't know. So then you come to find out, Kramer comes in, and they talk about how they're getting ready to go off to their little league game or softball league and play against this other team that's the troop that's going to be in Rochelle. And that Bette Midler will be there, and Janice is her understudy. And Kramer's like Bette Midler's going to be there? Like, the real Bette Midler? Like, I'm going. I'm going to go and watch, because he's a huge, little do you know, he's a huge Bette Midler fan. We cut to Elaine going to get her nails did at a... local stereotypical Korean nail shop.
At a Nail Tricks.
Is that what it's called? Oh, no, the ones around here, yeah. This place is Korean as fuck. It, like, this is not a set. Like, they just went into one of these places.
It feels like they just went into some Korean store.
Yeah, really. Like, even the wallpaper is trash in the same place. She goes in there, and she runs, because she's running late, and you see all these subtitle conversations between all the Korean... employees who are just like, well, look at this princess late again, like just shitting all over her. And she has this sneaking suspicion that they're talking shit about her.
If you go into an establishment and they don't speak English,
I 100% assume that.
Yep, they are 100% talking about you.
Yeah, no, that's because that's what I would do.
Yep.
That's what I would do. This German son of a bitch. You didn't know what we were saying. Yeah. So where I get my breakfast is like this little cafe in my office building.
Mm-hmm.
And the women who work there speak Spanish. I want to learn Spanish so that I can find out what they're saying and never say anything. I just want to know.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to know they're fucking talking about me.
And here's the thing. I don't think they're saying anything negative. Right. Like, we all get along. They seem very nice. But like... I just want to know.
No, I need to know.
I need to know. Right. Like, even if it's like, wow, he's looking really good today, I need to know that. I need to know that.
Right.
Or like, oh, hey, getting an extra egg in your omelet, you fat fuck. Like, I want to know. I want to know.
And see, that's the difference between us and like, because everybody wants to know, right?
Yeah, of course.
Everybody wants to know. But the difference is we are normal human beings who don't fly off the handle as soon as someone is in our presence starts speaking another language, right?
Like, I immediately start yelling, press one for English. I just start screaming it at them.
Like, we don't go off and just be like, this is America, you speak English.
I'm like, what do I give a fuck?
Yeah, I don't give a shit.
Here's the funny thing is, they're not speaking English in a federal building. Like, it's a government building. Like, who cares? I don't give a shit. Like, is the eggs done? Yeah, all right, cool. They seem really nice. What the fuck do I give a shit? You know, shout out to them. They're not listening. But oh, maybe they are. Who knows? Maybe they're premium listeners. And I just didn't know that. They don't know I'm the same guy. It's me. So from there, we have a situation. So they're at the softball game. And Elaine is explaining her situation. And she's like, I think they're talking about me. And she says they use the same term for me as they do for this dog that comes in. And she thinks that they're calling her a dog when they're actually probably calling her a princess. Right.
Yeah.
But Kramer's explanation is hilarious because he's like, well, maybe in Korean, dog isn't an insult. Maybe it's like, she's a fox. You know, like maybe that's what it kind of means over there. It's like, yeah, look at her. She's a real dog, which is just a hilarious line.
Like, as stupid as Kramer is, the logic is sound.
No, it is pretty sound. Actually, you don't know that. Like, you don't know culturally what it means. I'm pretty sure being called a dog in any language is offensive. But yeah, so she was like, no, I'm not buying that. So Jerry explains that George's father actually speaks fluent Korean because he spent a lot of time in Korea as a businessman. And so he might be a good person to take in there with you, take in there with you so that you can find out what they're saying. He also brags that his dad once talked to Sun Young Moon, which is hilarious because I don't think a lot of people watching this now who know who Sun Young Moon is. He's a cult leader.
Yeah.
He's a massive, massive cult leader.
Would you do this? I would 100% do this. Have you done this? You have a wide variety of friends. You have a rainbow coalition of associates.
I have never done it, but I 100% would do this.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I told you, I want to learn Spanish just so I know. Just so I know what they're saying. And then, like, on my last day, like, I would do that. I wouldn't say anything if I found out someone was talking shit about me in another language and I knew the language. I wouldn't say anything.
Right.
And then on like the last day I was there, I would just come in and I'd just be like, hey man, how's it going? Da, 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 da. And then I would just start speaking fluent, whatever. And like, you don't have to say anything else. Right. And they'd be like, oh, how long have you known that language? And I'd be like, 15 years. Oh, I speak fluent. And you know what I mean? Like,
right.
That alone is a massive amount of embarrassment.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so at my same job, we have a lot of foreign nationals and we have a number of Korean folks, actually. This is a story of a guy I had to fire a number of years ago, but he was a cokehead. A side note.
Yeah, I'll write that.
Yeah, he was a fucking idiot. But he was of Russian descent, right?
Yeah.
And he was talking shit about this Korean dude, but he didn't realize that the Korean dude also spoke fluent Russian because he lived in Russia for like 10 years.
Yeah.
And he had been saying shit about this guy, like not with that guy around, right? Like he would leave and then he'd be like, da, 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 you know, saying something to this other Russian guy that we work with. And then once he was in, they were in the same room and he was just about to say something like under his breath in Russian. And another Russian coworker came in and started talking Russian to the Korean guy and was like, oh yeah, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, oh shit. Like, you never know who knows the other languages, dude. Like, Korea and Russia are not that far away from each other.
Yeah,
like,
you
gotta be real careful, dude. Like, yeah, watch your mouth. Yeah, so he almost got his ass fired, but then later on, he got his ass fired anyway, so it's fine. That guy was a fuck-up.
That shit is hilarious. Yeah, you never know, man. With, like you could kind of assume certain people would know, like, certain European languages, but, like, East Asian languages, like,
nope.
And North Asian languages, like, nobody expects that shit.
Yeah. Oh, ho, he speaks Mongolian. All right, man, what the fuck? Yeah, you just don't know. You gotta be real careful about shit like that. And, like, at my job, people speak tons of languages. Like,
yeah.
Who the fuck knows? Chinese, whatever.
I used to work at this place called PowerCon, which is just a terrible place to work. And
I love you just give up. Here's the address.
It's in Severn, Maryland. Don't work there. And it has.
There's a listener right now sitting at his desk like,
some of the people are nice, but like, nah, don't work there. And it's a it's a wide variety of people. And again, some Korean people and Russian people were speaking, you know, Russian back and forth. Yeah. I couldn't, I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
But yeah, it makes sense.
They're right next door to, I mean, not next door, but like,
I mean, they're not that far.
Yo, Korea is really not far from Russia at all. you gotta be real careful what you say out your mouth.
But yeah, 100% I would do this.
Oh yeah. No, I would look. The chance, for the chance to embarrass someone. Are you kidding me? Hell yeah, dude. Hell yeah. Or, like, for the chance to really impress somebody. Just, like, randomly. Like, just super random, right? Yeah. Like, you speak a little bit of French. And, yeah,
very little.
Yeah, but me, it's like, the toilet, right? Like, yeah, my French is a zero, right? But you speak enough that most people would probably assume that you don't speak any.
I can get around. When we went to Montreal, I was talking to someone, and because I had, you know, some phrases memorized, but then she started talking way too fast, and I'm like, je ne parle pas français. And she was like, oh, well, you sound really good. I was like, oh, well, thank you.
Je m'appelle Micah. Yeah, like, all right. So we're at the end of our French. Poquito, that's Spanish. Damn it. Yeah, I don't speak any foreign languages. I speak Baltimore English and then American English. That's really it.
I mean, those are two different languages.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a dog.
Dog. You get that dog on the roof, yo.
Like, turn around and rinse it off.
Oh, yeah, rinse it off with some water.
Our fucking accents are horrendous. So then on to the actual softball game. Bette Midler is up to bat. I do like that George is like talking shit. He talks about giving Bette Midler some sweet shit music, having Jerry pitch like tough on the inside, like close to her face. I'm like, yo, what are you doing? Yo, it's a softball game. Relax.
Right. How fast is it going to be?
Yeah.
This isn't like a college, you know, women's softball.
Yeah, those people are fucking around.
Yeah, they will throw that ball quick as shit. Like, Jerry's lobbing the pitch.
Right, exactly. It's not that serious. That being said, I would love to play. I would love to be on a softball league. That sounds like fun.
Really?
Yeah. That sounds like it actually be kind of fun. I don't have the time, unfortunately, but it sounds like fun.
I'm softball is probably a little too coordinated for me. I would do kickball.
Okay.
There was a couple years ago, there was this big craze of adult kickball leagues.
Dude, they're still around.
They are?
It's just a reason to drink early on a Sunday.
That's all. I figured
they play the game, and then they go to a bar and hang out.
Yeah, I figured as much.
Yeah. No, they're still around. Oh, they're absolutely around. They used to play right near my old house. Not the house previous to this, but the place I lived a couple years ago.
Yeah.
In the middle of the game, George runs into, he hits the ball, and he has a in-the-park home run, and he charges the home plate where Bette Midler is playing catcher, and he just goes for it and fucking knocks her down to win the winning run, thus injuring her and allowing her understudy to take over.
It's weird. He doesn't touch the base, though. Like,
no, he walked right over.
He walked right over the base. Like, yeah. I guess, you know.
He just wanted to hit Bette Midler.
Right. He just wanted to hit her with a fucking running elbow.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I guess I get that. I mean, not to Bette Midler, but like to just some person. Meanwhile, Kramer had gone on a city run to get a pineapple Italian ice for Bette Midler.
He was being a creep, right? He's a big fan of Bette Midler, of all people, and is like, you want me to get you an Italian ice? She's like, what flavors do they have? He's like, chocolate, cherry, and, you know, vanilla or whatever.
Yeah.
She's like, I'll take pineapple.
Yeah, I'm like, yo, yeah, I just told you what they had.
Well, no, she said that shit just to get him the fuck away. Like, yeah. All right, yeah.
I'd be like, yeah, don't have pineapple.
Bitch.
So, sorry, Bette. Get out of here. But yeah, he goes running around the city and eventually finds it, and he makes his way back, finally, just as George is knocking her ass down. The rest of the crew is angry and chases George and Jerry away.
I ain't running from theater school, people, yo.
No, I'm going to fuck all of y'all up.
Yeah, I mean, it just... No, I can't.
No, we're going to kick your ass. Okay. Let's see how this is going to work.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I could beat you in waves.
I could take two of you at a time, yo. I know I can.
I'm looking at these guys. I'm like, are these a couple of string beans? Like,
right.
Nah,
yeah. Right. You guys are doing improv at on the weekends. Like, you don't even know how to tell jokes. You got to get assistance from the crowd to tell jokes.
Yeah.
How you going to fight me?
Yeah, nah, yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah, what you bench? So the next day, Janice is really happy with Jerry and George because she thinks they plan to take out Bette Midler so that she could play the role. And of course, they didn't. They were just fucking idiots. Kramer comes in with Jerry's keys and gives Janice a fucking drubbing, a verbal drubbing about how she's not going to make it in Broadway by knocking people down to lift herself up, which was hilarious. Let's see. Elaine takes George's dad to the Korean place, and he finds out that they are, in fact, talking shit about her and about him, and he flips out. And come to find out, a woman working in this nail shop was actually a woman that he met and dated in Korea. And she comes out and she's like, Frank, oh my God, it's you. And he's just, they're kind of like happy to see each other because they haven't seen each other in
years. By the way, these people are probably
not even Korean.
Of Korean descent.
Are they?
They're probably of Korean descent.
Korean
but
enough.
Grew up in America, and just affecting the most racist ass accent.
Yo, the way she says Bette Midler is
Bette Midler.
Yeah, it's like one. You sound like a Japanese stereotype, not a Korean stereotype.
Like you remember with the woman who had the affair with Frank. Remember what she sounded like in the episode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's from South Dakota.
Yeah, like, come on, man. Yeah.
Oh, Franco!
Oh, Frankson, how you doing? I'm like, yo, come on, yo. I mean, this show is notorious for being, like, pretty racist towards minorities. Like, very stereotypical.
It's very bigoted.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. I feel like it was the 90s. You're allowed to get away with it to some degree. But, yeah, it's like, no, but the middle of... I'm like, yo, what is this, Breakfast at Tiffany's? Like, come on, yo. God damn. It's so racist. Oh, it's so racist. So Kramer is taking care of Bette Midler at the local hospital. And he's like literally filing her nails. And she's like, make sure you order me some food and get me a black and white cookie. If I don't get a black and white cookie, I can be impossible. And Kramer's like, how could you be impossible? And she smiles because he's fawning all over her. Meanwhile, Elaine is...
She's banned from the store for bringing in a spy.
She's a look under the Korean War. I'm like, all right, relax. Relax. Relax, episode. Relax. You're being a fucking racist. So she gets banned from a store, and she's really broken up about it, probably because they've got the rain machine on 1,000. Like it's Rambo 4. And as she's walking, this very dapper dressed man comes up to her, and he's like, oh, very soft, huge button flaps, and he's like referring cargo pockets, drawstring waist, deep by swing vents in the back, perfect for jumping into a dumpster. Like, wait, what? What are you talking about? He's like, that's my coat. I'm Jay Peterman.
Do you know there's a real Jay Peterman catalog?
Yes, I did know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I did. I don't know anything about Jay Peterman, and I don't know. I assume it's all written weirdly like that.
I'll look, but yeah, there's a Jay Peterman catalog. Shit is just hilarious to me. John Peterman, he's a real guy.
He's a real person.
He looks more like John Waters than John O'Hurley.
Okay.
But yeah, There's a real J. Peterman catalog.
I like the way, like, J. Peterman's character, and this is obviously the first time we meet him, and he's a recurring character. He's one of my favorite recurring characters.
Yeah.
Because he talks like a fucking imbecile. Like, he talks like a person who actually got hit over the head with a sledgehammer when they were young, but then has an extensive vocabulary. Like, he had it before he got hit. And so he just says just a collection of random words. It's just fucking hilarious.
And yes, the clothing does have story associated with it.
Yeah, I think I remember looking this up a number of years ago. But yeah, do you have any examples?
Very little that Sylvia is not up for. I do know she's repulsed by a few things. Old money, monogamy, and coffee. Odd, considering she's Italian. She arrived at the humble 20,000 square foot country house in Taconic Road by helicopter with a group of people who seemed wealthy enough to buy seats on the one space shuttle that'd be out of town right before the meteor hit. What the fuck? What's going on? As always, she came with a plan. By 10 o'clock, she'd replaced the high heels with a pair of sneakers and was taking Edmund Thomas Wellington, the third, I believe, to school on the grass courts. This was the Greenwich, Connecticut version of Billie Jean and Bobby Riggs. The dress looked equally at home by holding a Gibson or a tennis racket. I had a sneaking suspicion that Sylvia had read Wellington's comments in the paper regarding male and female athletes. After her resounding victory, I pointed out her chic and sporty tennis dress, fitted but with a little stretch for movement, sleeveless with extended shoulders, of course. This was not by coincidence. How's your backhand these days? I asked.
What the fuck?
You know me. You know me, Peterman. Still hitting like a girl. Sylvia's dress, number 5584, cotton satin, that's 5% spandex, fitted with alluring zip up front, stunning pastel floral print that is not placed so each dress is unique. Sleeveless with extended shoulder, V-neck, and brought up around the sides and back to hug the neck and shoulders for a certain look.
Wow.
Slant pockets at high hip, princess seams at front, fitted waist darts at back, upper calf length, fully lined, imported.
Does it have a price? Yeah, that should have been $5,000 for that dress.
It was $219 on sale for $109.
Oh, that's a deal. That's a deal.
Like, this thing had that long ass story.
No, it's a dress with flowers on it, my nigga. And it's ugly. It's mad ugly.
That is hysterical. I didn't know this was real.
I knew the J. Peterman thing was real. I knew it had stories. I've never read any of them. That's nuts. Because that means they're not exaggerating at all.
No, they're not. Like, and they're just ridiculous like that. Like the ones inside, the stories in Seinfeld are just as ridiculous as what I just read.
Because he at one point he says her dress would look as good with a Gibson or a racket. I'm pretty sure a Gibson is a drink.
A Gibson is a guitar.
Oh, I thought he was referring to the Gibson drink.
Oh, he might have. I think.
Yeah, the Gibson is a mixed drink made with gin and dry vermouth, often garnished with a pickled onion. No, he's got to be talking
about
the
drink. Yeah, he's got to be talking about the drink.
Yeah. No, a guitar? Not with that drink. I mean, that's more of an East Hampton lovely sunny day. Da, da, da. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yes. Well, I don't drink, so that's why
I only know that because there's a great speakeasy in D.C. called the Gibson.
Ah. Gibson, well, Les Paul guitars, yeah.
Maybe. Who the fuck knows?
These are kind of fascinating.
All right, we're gonna have to get one more before we end the episode because that's too good. So she has dinner. Elaine has dinner with J. Peterman, where they just exchange more of these massively insane little stories, like as they're talking about like the shirt she's wearing, or you know, like they're just doing this, and he's like, "Oh, that's pretty good." Like she does one off the cuff, and he gives her a job. He offers her a job. Meanwhile, Frank is reunited with. the Korean woman, and he stopped short in traffic, and she was like, "You stopped short? We don't do that in Korea. Take me home." Because she's a, you know, she's a larger gal, so I'm sure when he stopped short, he grabbed a titty, like, immediately. So, yeah, she gets pissed. Meanwhile, Kramer brings Bette Midler a macaroni Midler, and for some reason, she must be high on drugs. She thinks this is a cool idea, and she starts singing the song from Rochelle, Rochelle, and then Kramer quickly gets her the hell out of there because George, Jerry, and Jerry's girlfriend, what the hell's her name? Janice, they come to visit Bette, and he's like, "No, I don't trust you because you guys try to take Bette Midler out." So he scurries her away out of the hospital. We cut to Elaine buying tickets for the three Korean women for the Rochelle Rochelle play because she felt bad about bringing a spy. They go into the play, and it's announced that Bette Midler won't be playing Rochelle Rochelle, but instead the understudy will. And the Asian women flip out.
No Bette Midler?
Janissa Graham? Graham? No Bette Midler? Wow, it's super racist. Like, it's super duper racist. And she's like, "Oh no, she got hurt." And she's like, "No, but the middle of." And then they just start talking in Korean, and they're like, "God, get the fuck out of here." And then they basically just bounce. And of course, now they hate Elaine all over again. Jerry's girlfriend, Janice, gets up there and tries to do the play. And we didn't talk about this, but she cries all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And she finds out her grandmother died and doesn't cry, but she cries over, like, dropping a hot dog.
I mean, can you imagine how much of a bitch that grandmother has to be?
Yeah, she was just like,
"Yeah, no, it's okay." And she just fucking throws away the telegram.
Yeah.
Fuck that bitch.
But her boot comes untied in the middle of the play, and she starts crying. She's like, "I need to start over, please." And then that's how it ends. And then there's a little stinger where Jerry comes home, and he hears Kramer singing Rochelle Rochelle song in his apartment. And then he hears Bette Midler also singing along, and he just shakes his head, and he's just like, "Nah, you know what? Nope. Just going to go in my house." He's like, "I didn't hear that. And I'm just going to go in my house. Like, fuck it. It's fine." I like to think that Kramer had sex with Bette. Yeah, had sex with Bette
Midler. Oh, absolutely he did. Yeah, absolutely. He's got the Kavorka. No woman can resist it.
All right. One last readout from an actual J. Peterman catalog readout before we get out of here.
So, this is Paris, 1951, just after dawn. A woman steps out onto a balcony in her nightgown, this one a flutter of poinsettia red. At street level, heads turn. Across the street, the bake shop window opens. But the baker is busy setting up for the day and doesn't notice. He'll catch up. "Is that Myrna Loy?" someone asked. Someone whispered. In French, of course. There's a smile at play. There's a smile at play at the corner of her mouth, a breeze at play with her curls and the hem of her skirt. Nothing scandalous, but nonetheless unforgettable. This is how hearts break. Can she really be unaware of the stir that she's caused below? Oh, she's aware. Sweetheart.
Well, that's wild.
Sweetheart lace nightgown.
Holy shit.
Number 5444.
The fact that they have the readout numbers in it, it's hilarious.
Cotton with lace accents. We've shaped the skirt to flirt and flatter. Not that you'll need help. Scoop neckline. French seams. Lace yoke at the front and back reveals just enough. Upper calf length, flattering waist and side seam, curved peplum, flounces at the hips for maximum va-va-voom. Balcony optional, made in India.
Nigga, this shit is amazing. Yo, I gotta start reading these. That's good. That is really fucking hilarious. I don't know, like, there's no other way to end the episode. That's perfect. That's it for this episode entitled The Understudy. And we will see you guys next week for the beginning of season 7, The Engagement.
Ah, yes.
Excellent. Yeah, shit's about to get real.
Yeah, buddy.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Really?